I am Dina Azar, and joining me today on Between the Dunes is Ronnie Ward, a Lafayette College government and law major and Posse scholar. Let's get to it.
So me and Ronnie were sitting here thinking about how we always go into tangents speaking about what's happening in the Arab world right now.
And it's funny because Dina always says I should have been an international affairs major.
So we were like, why don't we make a podcast, but international affairs edition.
Yeah, and we were just talking about El-Sisi because of recent news of Fatah still being detained after 13 years. And I was like, Dina, we're actually kind of good at this.
Yeah, so bear with us, guys. We're going to try out using this equipment for the first time and share what we've been reading about on our own time.
It's mainly going to be about democratic backsliding in Egypt, starting with the fall of Mubarak.
So Omar Hamzawi writes on the Middle East Eye, saying that the main two reasons for Egypt failing miserably to become a proper democracy after the fall of Mubarak was due to the lack of a vision and the drifting of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, before that, to give some context, Mubarak ruled Egypt from 1981 to 2011. He focused on economic liberalization and had a huge role in the Camp David Accords with Israel, but it was also highly characterized by human rights abuses like police brutality, political censorship, and restrictions of freedom of speech and assembly.
Yeah, so all signs of democratic backsliding. Or not even backsliding, but an absence of democracy in the first place, I would say.
Yeah, I was going to say it's difficult to even discuss democratic backsliding in the MENA region because the majority of the countries don't have a strong basis of democracy to begin with. So it's helpful to think of this as like an attempt toward democracy after 2011 that happened to fail. I mean, the last thing I'll say is he had strong ties with the U.S. at the time, gaining financial support of up to $1 billion a year since 1957, and got Egypt to be a member of the Allied coalition in the 1991 Gulf War. He was ousted February 11th following consistent demonstrations during the start of the Arab Spring and eventually detained in April.
Yeah, and from then on, that's when we see the effects of the Arab Spring on Egypt, which, to provide some context, was a wave of protests for reform and a push towards democracy all across the MENA region. I like to describe this as a wave rather than a spring because this was not sudden.
Yeah, definitely not sudden.
No, not at all. There has always been ideas of democratization surrounding the Tahrir Square in Cairo. Protests have been held there since the Bread Riot in 1977 and against the Iraq War in 2003. Mm-hmm. The protest was organized by a group of young activists who have been inspired by the uprisings in Tunisia like the rest of the MENA region, basically, and were using social media platforms such as Facebook and Twitter to mobilize support for their cause. The protest movement was organized around a set of demands, which included the removal of Mubarak from power, the establishment of a democratic system, and the protection of human rights and civil liberties.
Yeah.
Anyways, during this time, Morsi wins the first election following Mubarak in 2012, and he becomes the first democratically elected president in Egypt. He was the head of the Freedom and Justice Party.
Yeah, but that was the only democratic thing about him.
No, literally. I don't think we should even spend much time on him because I want to get into current affairs with El-Sisi. But Ronnie, what would you say his downfall was, since I think you know more about this than me?
I would say it's the same patterns that we're seeing in El-Sisi right now, to be honest. I was reading a study that compared Tunisia and Egypt's transition to democracy by Farah Bakarat, and he said, and I quote, "Morsi forced enormous expectations but accomplished little to help poor and middle-class Egyptians deal with their crushing economic woes. Instead, he focused on brotherhoodization of the state, appointing brotherhood members to important government positions."
Oh, yes. I know that people were not happy with his focus on gaining political control rather than economic and social reform for the Egyptian people. I just saw here, according to BBC News, Morsi was sentenced to 20 years of hard labor in April 2015 after being found guilty of ordering the unlawful detention and torture of opposition protesters during clashes with Muslim Brotherhood supporters outside of the Ittihadia presidential palace in Cairo in December 2012.
Yeah, exactly. Even if we were to go back to what Hamzawi was saying about there being a lack of vision for what politics was going to look like, Morsi was pushing strongly for a higher Islamic influence on Egypt, mainly by having the majority of people with authoritative power be from Muslim Brotherhood, and people didn't like that.
Especially since most of the youth and liberalization groups were looking for a more secular Egypt, which they preferred the use of the term civil Egypt to secular because of the connotations of the word secular.
Okay. So Morsi falls because of political censorship, specifically restricting the freedom of speech and assembly surrounding the mere presence of Muslim Brotherhood in government.
Okay, now let's transition into El-Sisi.
There was a coup in 2013 by Abdel Fattah in El-Sisi. He was the former head of military under Morsi's rule.
He's remained in power ever since after winning the elections following the coup. He is now predicted to be in power until, at a minimum, 2030.
Wow.
In 2023, Sisi faced real competition for the first time in a while, running against Ahmed Tantawi. Tantawi can also be proven to be an interesting and real candidate because he was able to surpass the eligibility requirements.
Okay.
Executive aggrandizement, coined by Nancy Bermeo, refers to the action of the president acting outside the bandwidth of their checks and balances. Sisi is a prime example of this due to the changes within democratic institutions themselves, and these are the ones that are meant to promote democratic ideals. In 2019, the term that presidents could act as president was extended from 4 to 6 years, which also allows presidents to serve 3 consecutive terms. Sisi also adjusted the military courts that civilians could be prosecuted by them, and also appointed a military general to the constitutional court in 2022. Ultimately, there was a grand increase in military control and participation in people's daily lives, going against the previous ideals of democracy that were set in Egypt. And this made it harder for anyone to challenge Sisi's regime due to the strong backing of the military behind him.
Following the 2011 uprising, Egypt had the chance to create a more democratic and inclusive constitution, focusing on reforms like a weaker presidency, stronger parliament, human rights protections, and judicial independence. However, the process became polarized as Islamists, revolutionary forces, and state institutions vied for influence, and the military ultimately intervened, suspending the 2012 constitution and leading to another flawed constitutional drafting process in 2014.
Yeah, so getting more into the constitution, since that is a key indicator of backsliding, the 2014 Egyptian constitution establishes a security state with democratic features, granting significant autonomy to key state institutions like the military, police, judiciary, and al-Azhar. It also enhances the military's power, while the judiciary gains autonomy, a move that limits civilian oversight.
Most media in Egypt are controlled by the state, intelligence agencies, or influential businessmen loyal to the government, while independent outlets like Madame Asir, for example, are blocked, with the site inaccessible since 2017. Amid the government's counterterrorism efforts, journalists are often accused of, quote unquote, belonging to a terrorist organization and spreading false information within Egypt's security state. As of today, Egypt currently has 20 journalists detained.
A very popular case in the media right now is that of Ala Abd al-Fattah, whose sentence has been continuously extended, and he's basically been in prison since 2013 for his work speaking against Sisi, which is also the catalyst of today's podcast.
So what can we learn from Egypt's case? The conditions of Egypt's backsliding, such as the arrest of el-Sisi's running mates, detained journalists, and occasions of media censorship, are best iterated in How Democracies Die by Stephen Levitsky and Daniel Ziblatt. It reads, democracies may die at the hands of not generals, but of elected leaders, presidents or prime ministers who subvert the very process that brought them to power. The foundations of democratic erosion are often misunderstood. People still believe democracies die at the hands of outright dictatorships.
Exactly. So el-Sisi did conduct a coup d'etat in 2013 to remove the president from power, but he attained his power with a seemingly democratic election. Egypt is an example of how democratic backsliding is most often a gradual development, and it can occur in systems that are established to be democratic in the first place. Thank you guys for indulging in our discussion on Egypt's history and current affairs with democracy. If you would like to read further on this topic, consider checking out 7 Years On, Why Egypt Failed to Become a Democracy by Amr Hamzawi, A Comparative Analysis of Tunisia and Egypt's Transitions to Democracy by Farah Barakat, Democratic Backsliding in Egypt by Yasmin Sharif, and Egypt's Constitutional Cul-de-Sac by Nathan J. Brown.